House Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:17 on January 29th. Members present are Representative Josephson, Representative Sadler, Representative Perrin, Representative Reinbold, myself, Chair Olson. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome back. A lot of familiar faces in the room, at least several. Representative Millett has been previously excused. May I request that you please turn off your cell phones. We have three bills on the agenda today. Go through them in order, I guess. House Bill 239, the extension of the Board of Examiners in Optometry. And with us presenting the bill is somebody familiar with it, Crystal Koneman from Representative Reinbold's office. Welcome back. I think you probably testified before this committee more than just about anybody, but welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It is good to be back. For the record, my name is Crystal Koneman, staff to Representative Reinbold. Before us today is House Bill 239, as Representative Olson had stated. This bill will reauthorize the Board of Optometrists for 8 years per Ledge Audit's recommendation. The Division of Legislative Audit concluded that the termination date of June 30th, 2022 was sufficient as the Board is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing and regulating the industry. There was one recommendation that they determined was necessary, and that's for the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing within the Department of Commerce to continue their efforts to improve their case management system. I know over the last few years the division has taken great strides to improve the integrity of that system, and I do believe that they'll continue on with those efforts. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm available for any questions that may be.
Any questions for Crystal? I don't have any, Crystal. With us, we also have Chris Curtis in the room for questions from Ledge Audit, and we have Don Habiger from the Division of Corporations. Does anybody have any questions for Chris?
For Crystal.
Oh, Crystal. Yeah, Crystal. Oh, we have Crystal.
Chris, Crystal, great. It's
Crystal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to let you get away, Hans Kate.
She's going to be there for all three bills. So
okay,
she's not
good.
Going anyplace.
Just other, it looks like we might be taking positive action in this, but just curious while we have you up, are there any developments or changes in the practice of optometry that we might need to know about or that might have come up either during the audit or any other time? Just is our chance to dipstick in and see what the practice is.
Thank you, Representative Sadler, through the chair. I do not believe that there's any outstanding issues with the board or the profession of optometry that we need to be aware of at this time. I think they're functioning quite well.
And no likely issues coming up in other legislation?
Not that I'm aware of.
Any further questions for Crystal? How about for Chris?
Well, yes, for Chris. No.
Come on up, Chris.
No, I.
Oh,
here.
No,
I have no questions.
Any questions for Don?
No.
We have nobody online. Do we have anybody? I'll open up public testimony. We do have somebody online?
Yes.
No, we have nobody online for this bill. Is there anybody on the in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I guess we'll close out public testimony and bring it back to the committee for discussion. Representative Herron.
Thanks to Representative Reinbold's staff. I can clearly see that this is needed.
Oh, I think it was compelling testimony, too. Is that what you're saying?
I'd say that glasses joke is half empty.
Any further committee discussion? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we move HB 239 version 28-LS1178/A from committee with individual recs and attached fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition, the bill will move out of committee and we'll take a brief at ease. We're back on the record. The next item on the calendar is House Bill 240. With us to present the bill is Crystal Koneman again. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Crystal Koneman, staff to Representative Reinbold. Before us today, we have House Bill 240, which is a bill that would extend the Board of Chiropractic Examiners. Division of Legislative Audit recommended that this board be extended for a full 8 years to June 30th, 2022, as they are serving the public's interest and effectively licensing and regulating the chiropractic community. There were two recommendations that the Division of Legislative Audit came out with. One was a past audit recommendation, which was that the board, or that the Office of the Governor shall appoint board members in accordance with statute. In the past, there was one board member that did not meet the statutory requirements for the appointment. And since that audit had come out, the Office of the Governor had made the appropriate steps, politely removed that member from the board and reappointed one that was in accordance with statute. The second recommendation from legislative audit was that the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing shall improve their investigative case management systems. And as I mentioned for the prior bill, they have taken great strides over the last few years to improve that system, and I have faith that they will continue doing so. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm available for questions.
Representative Heron, you look like you have a question.
I'll save it for general comments.
Yes, we got that part. Any questions? Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Ms. Kamen, the fiscal note for the previous board for optometrists had about a $6,000 or $6,800. This has a $16,600 per year travel costs. I noticed in the notes it said there's an out-of-state professional conference that members of this board will attend. What's that conference and where is it? And just any information about that conference?
Thank you, Representative Sadler, through the chair. I believe that Director Haviger may be able to better answer that, but I do know that with this profession as well as some of the other ones, they do attend out-of-state trainings and conferences to keep themselves current with national practices and making sure that they're getting additional statute language, possibly from other states, and making sure just pretty much keeping in touch with what other states are doing.
Okay. Follow up?
Yeah, just reading Matthew, since I can. It looks like. Again, the previous board had two meetings a year for $6,800. This has four meetings a year for $16,800. I'm just wondering how much more they, or $16,600, how much that out-of-state conference cost. The numbers don't exactly add up for me.
And Representative Sadler, through the chair, I would.
Okay. Well, that's the appropriate time, Mr. Chairman. I'll ask that question.
Any further questions for Ms. Kinderman? Thank you. Chris, I wonder if we could get you up for a minute or two. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back. For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, representing the Division of Legislative Audit. So our agency did conduct a sunset audit of the Board of Chiropractic Examiners. It's dated June 6th of 2013. As Crystal already discussed, we did recommend extending the termination date of the board, the maximum allowed in statute, which is 8 years. We did conclude that the board was operating in the public's interest. The audit concluded the board monitors licensees and ensures that only qualified individuals practice. From FY06 through FY12, the board adopted, repealed, or revised 35 regulations, and the changes focused primarily on updating continuing education. And other changes included adding an oral examination to the licensing requirement, requiring criminal background checks for applicants, and clarifying and defining regulatory language. From FY06 through FY12, the number of license applications increased, licensed applicants increased by 28%, from 226 in FY06 to 290 in FY12. And as Crystal already discussed, we came out with two recommendations. One to the director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing, and one to the Office of the Governor regarding the appointment of board members.
We must be happy if you gave me ears. Any questions?
Just a quick question.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted you to reiterate, how many regulations did you say you repealed?
Through the chair, the audit concluded that there were 35 regulations that were revised, repealed, or adopted during that time period as an indication of board activity.
Okay. All right. So in aggregate, it's all three. Okay.
So it's an active board?
Yes.
Representative Sutton?
Thank you. Chris, if I could ask you my questions about the expenses for travel to the out-of-state training conference. First off, it's not a training conference for members to attend to improve their practice skills as chiropractors, but how to operate as members of a professional licensing board. Is that correct?
Through the chair, I cannot answer that question directly. I'd have to go to the division director. I can say that our audit did address travel. There are some boards that have had problems obtaining out-of-state travel, using their budgets for that, and this is one of the, we did five occupational sunsets, and this is the only one that we found that did have problems with not being permitted to travel. And on page 15 of our audit, we did conclude that that impeded their ability to operate as a board, and we concluded that board members were prohibited from traveling out of state due to DCBPL budgetary restrictions. And according to DCBPL management, restrictions on travel should be alleviated in FY14 by an increase in the travel budget and the ability to receive third-party reimbursements for some board member travel. And I believe what that means is that in some cases when you travel to these conferences, they do reimburse maybe the board chair or certain, it could, because it's part of the fee for being part of the national organization.
Paul? So you're saying that you say could not get permission, board members could not get permission from the division to attend, so the ultimate decision on how to spend the fees that are generated through licenses is not with the board members, but with the division, is that correct?
I would direct that, through the chair, direct that question to the division director. There, during testimony in last year's hearings, there were complaints by board members regarding the ability to use their budget for out-of-state travel, and so we definitely included that in our audit scope when we did our sunset audits in 2013, and this was the only board we found that had that specific problem.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Curtis, I'm trying to get, just for my own edification, when we talk about 35 changes to regs, how does this process work, and if the body will sort of, or the committee will sort of indulge this a little bit? In other words, I envision these chiropractors sitting around a table and saying, this regulation is redundant, this, we need a regulation on this because we have these assistants and they're not regulated. Do they have sort of absolute power to create these subject to Lieutenant Governor's approval? I mean, consistent with their statutory enabling act, I'm just sort of wondering how that process works, if you know.
Representative Josephson, through the chair, I think the division director can give us a more detailed, and I think it would vary by board, but one of the a criteria that we use in evaluating as part of the sunset process, and they're laid out in the audit, is to what degree there are addressing public interest and one of the ways they do that is through enacting regulations. So I know that they have that authority, and I think that would be a good question for the division director, and as far as specifically how they logistically goes about doing that.
Principally, I'm just curious if they're what the check on the body itself is, and this would be true for any board or commission.
Representative Josephson, through the chair, all regulations go through a public notice process. So I think that would be one of the most important checks and legal review.
Any further questions for Chris? Thanks again. And she'll be in the room probably till the end of the meeting, I'm guessing. Don Habiger, could you join us, please? And welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Yes, sir. For the record, my name is Don Habiger. I'm Division Director of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing. At your will, Mr. Chairman, would you like me to address each of the questions? I count three at the moment.
One, two, and three.
Very good. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, question number one from Representative Sadler is actually one and two, is travel cost. The Board of Chiropractic Examiners and each profession, I should say, is a little bit different. They have, in some cases, they have regional meetings, and generally what these meetings are is there is a national association. Oftentimes there's a membership that is connected to that national association. And it is a group of like-minded state regulators and board members from across the nation that meet periodically to regulate the practice. Typically, they're looking at practice decisions. Injectable nutrients, for example, is an issue that one of our boards is dealing with. And they will deliberate and I think come to consensus or agree to disagree on any of these national practice issues that affect the profession. Further, I do happen to know that the Board of Chiropractic Examiners are asked to go to a national group, and there are a number of state board representatives that design the national test. So they may add questions or they may delete questions based on the relevancy of that particular practice and as the practice evolves. I believe our chairman, Dr. Heston, has done this in the past. The 15,000 is really a look at FY14. Again, it's a biennial time. It's an average of looking at those costs, actual in-state and out-of-state travel costs, and putting that down based on the last 2 years and those meeting frequencies. So that's number one, limited travel, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly.
The limited travel issue is one that we, I think, as Ms. Kieneman or Ms. Curtis said, we think is corrected. We felt that it was a budgetary appropriation issue. When I first arrived, we had, as I recall, a little over $300,000 in travel appropriation on that line. However, if you look at annual reports, and each profession gives us each board tells us what they want to do in travel, and they do so through an annual report, which is a requirement by statute. In that annual report, if I tallied all of those requests, it's about $550,000 in in-state and out-of-state. Previously, what I did is I came up with a priority system. If it's an in-state meeting, statutorily required, it got funded. If it was an out-of-state meeting, it was, if you will, basically whatever resources were available. And if there were limited amounts of resources, some out-of-state travel did not occur. Again, I want to emphasize that in 2014, the legislature, particularly the Finance Committee, increased our travel budget by $200,000, so this alleviated the problem. There was a quick mention of third-party reimbursement. There are a number of associations, national groups, excuse me, that do encourage state board members to attend, and they do so through a reimbursement process. There was not heretofore a way to take that revenue that we deposited into the general fund, if it was given to the state, and put it back on the board's revenue line. That was corrected last year. $20,000 was, again, we just call it third-party reimbursement. It probably has a more technical name. However, it gives us that mechanism to put it into the board's revenue line. And then lastly, regulation promulgation, through the chair, Representative Josephson. The division has, when there is a board, Title VIII sort of gives that practice authority to the boards. The division does not have authority in that. So the boards themselves will, as Ms. Curtis said, identify things that need to be repealed, identify additional practice, and that's what these are, practice regulations that define additional educational requirements. Oftentimes, each of our practices has that. Every 2 years, they have to have so many education kinds of practice education, and they update those from time to time. I cannot tell you what those 35 things are, but that's really how it happens. The board will work with our regulation specialist. Regulations will be drafted, practice regulations. They do go out for public comment. 30 days is typical. All licensees are notified, including, I think, even the legislature gets kind of copies of these. We encourage all of comments. The comments go back to the board. The board reviews those. They make the decision on what they want to uphold or if there's any changes, and then it's adopted. So that's the process.
Any further questions?
I'll ask you if you can answer. Great. Are there any, the same question I asked Crystal about the optometrists, are there any developments in the scope of practice or professional practice or science or technology that might affect how chiropractors work and we might see come up as issues in the future?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I believe they are looking at injectable nutrients as an issue. I'm not 100% sure of that. There are 20 boards, and I know one of them is working on this one. I think it's them, but I will confirm that for you.
As long as it's not the optometrist or injecting. Thank you.
Thanks again, and you'll be around for the next one?
Yes, sir.
Thanks again, Don. With that, I will open it up to public testimony. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we do have at least one person online. Jim Heston, are you with us, Jim?
Yes.
Thank you for joining us today. Could you please state your name and affiliation for the record, please?
I'm Dr. Jim Heston. I'm chairman of the chiropractic board.
Well, thank you for joining us today, and feel free to start your comments.
Well, some of the questions that were asked about our out-of-state travel, I could add some clarity to. We are connected with fellow boards, and we do have similar missions, and it really helps us keep current with national trends. So we can, if we need to, we can proactively make regulation changes. And 35 amendments, I don't know about that. That seems like a lot. I can recall maybe 10 regulatory changes.
Well, just speaking as the chair of the committee, I don't have backup documentation on that, but we could probably track that down for you.
Well, 35 seems like a lot. We have been busy, but not that busy.
Well, we were impressed with 35, so probably have to leave it at that. But please continue.
I don't really have any further comments.
Can we just clarify one point?
Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, through the chair. I just wanted to state that was repealing, amending, and revising, from my understanding. All of it in sum.
I can believe that.
Well, thanks again for joining us today, Dr. Elston. Is there anybody else online that is scheduled to testify on this bill? And there's nobody in the room that's changed their mind? With that, we'll close out the public testimony and bring it back. Any thoughts?
I wish Representative Carroll was going to make this comment.
He had to run to another meeting briefly. Okay. Representative Sattler.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we move HB 240 version 28-LS1179er/alpha from the committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition to the bill, we'll move out of committee and we will take a brief at ease. And we're back on the record, and the last item on the calendar today is House Bill 241, the extension of the Board of Marital and Family Therapy. And with us again is Crystal Keeneman, staff to Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome Chairman. Back.
Thank you. Again, it's good to be back. For the record, my name is Crystal Keeneman, staff to Representative Reinbold. Before us today, we have House Bill 241, which is an act extending the Board of Marital and Family Therapy. Division of Legislative Audit did their review, and they had come back and concluded that this board shall be extended until June 30th, 2018. So they recommended only a four-year extension to this one. This was based on a previous sunset audit back in 2009. There were two recommendations that were not fully resolved. The first one that wasn't resolved was the need for the Board of Marital and Family Therapy to develop a strategy to address the need for distance therapy and distance supervision. In speaking with the board chair, I know they had gone back and forth with the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing and the Department of Law, and have concluded that this will require statutory language. I know the board is planning on working on that piece, as well as some other statutory language moving forward for a possible introduction for next session.
Ms. Kinneman, is this a relatively small board?
Yes, sir, it is.
That's part of the problem then?
Mr. Chairman, it is.
Or one of the challenges would probably be more appropriate. Thank you.
The other recommendation that Legislative Audit had was for the Office of the Governor and the Board to work together in a timely fashion to appoint vacant board seats, and that also goes into the fact that it's a small board. There's just under 100 members, but I do either the director or if the board chair is online, they may be able to give you a better number on that. In regards to that vacant board seat, it has since been filled. The last recommendation from Legislative Audit is that Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing improve their investigative case management system. As I mentioned prior, they have done good work on that. Mr. Chairman, other than those points that I've mentioned, we concur with Ledge Audit that for a four-year extension, and I'm available for questions.
You got the first one already, Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said there's 100 members of the LMFT community in effect?
That's my understanding of the number of licensees.
Okay. That just is sort of surprising to me. Do you know whether or not there must be regulations that say if you practice in this area, at some point you need to be a member of this body, right?
Correct. Representative Josephson, through the chair, I do know that in statute there are specific guidelines as to what counts in order to receive your license. I do know that there is a requirement for 1,500 hours of practice with an additional 200 hours of supervised.
Okay. And just one other question. When it refers to, and it may be that Ms. Curtis knows this better, but when you refer to distant supervision, is that referring to patients or couples that are in distant locations or subordinates who are not yet LPCs or LPAs or have some other licensure? Or what is that? Are these the clients or the workers that need supervision?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, I would divert to.
Thanks.
Representative Reinbold, no question. Representative Salford.
I've got a question for Mr. Weber online.
Oh, okay. Well, before we get to him, we'll get to Chris and Tom. Thank you, Crystal. Chris, please join us.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, representing Division of Legislative Audit. We did conduct a sunset audit, and it's dated June 19, 2013. Again, the audit is a main objective, determine whether the board is serving the public's interest and whether it should be extended. As Crystal said, we recommended only a four-year extension. The reason for that reduced extension is that the board did not fully address our prior sunset audit recommendation to pursue regulation changes that are necessary to protect the public's interest. The prior sunset had a little different reasoning on that recommendation, but this current audit, it is, although they've initiated one regulation change, they have not addressed the need for distance therapy and distance supervision. To respond to the question about distance supervision, that has to do with licensing. In order to become a licensed marital and family therapist, you are, have to have a certain number of supervisory hours. And so a distance supervision would be not co-located, be able to do that electronically, possibly through the net or some other technological assisted manner. Marital and family therapy, the services are not widely available throughout many areas of the state, and distance therapy and distance supervision is viewed as a solution to address this need. During the current audit period, the board extensively researched and discussed the topic. However, it made little progress in developing regulations and does not have a strategy to move the topic out of the discussion phase. The audit recommends the board develop a strategy to address the need for distance services. As far as response to the audit, both the board and the department concurred with the recommendation.
Representative Jones?
No. Chair Olson, may I address the question of license count?
Oh, certainly. My fault.
The license count for applicants was 91. As of March 2013, and they also license associates. So I don't have a account on the associate licenses.
Just a comment on that. I guess I'm just surprised because if you're trying to market yourself, the more letters, the better often. And so I just thought there would be a bigger sort of group.
Representative Justin, through the chair, this is one type of license: professional counselors, mm-hmm. social work examiners. There are several others.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Chris, do you have, as part of your audit, any historical counts on licensees from their licensed marital and family therapists?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, on page 17, we do have a account by year on how many were issued by year, and that isn't exactly what you're asking for, but it's the best information we have in the audit. It varies between 3 a year to 9.
Okay. And that's new issuances. That's not a net. That's just a
growth. That's new issuances.
And we'll ask the chair here shortly the other questions.
Thank you very much, Chris. Come on up, Donna. I thought it was. I think we're probably going to have enough questions where we can bring you all the way up.
Again, for the record, my name is Don Habiger, and I'm Division Director of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing. Mr. Chairman, if I may, I actually would defer even some of these practice questions to Chairman Weber. I think he could answer those even better than I could. I could take a stab, but I fear that I wouldn't be as qualified as him.
And actually, he'll be up shortly. Any other questions for Mr. Habiger? Thanks, Don. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify now that we're open to the public? Seeing none, Liam Weber, are you with us?
I am, thank you.
You probably have heard a number of questions. You want to take a stab at the first one?
Would you repeat the first one as you understand it?
The first one, the disparity between the number of people, the size of the pool. But could you read yourself onto the record?
My name is Leon Weber. I'm chairman of the Alaska Board of Marital and Family Therapy, and I'm from Anchorage, Alaska.
We have some questions about No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
If I understand the question about disparity, during a period of time when it was unclear about our finances and we were incurring a huge expense for an investigation, our fees went up considerably, I think approaching $1,000 per licensing period. And several of our colleagues transferred to larger groups like licensed professional colleagues, which were really in the $200 to $400 bracket. Our field, as I understand from our meeting last week in Juneau, has approximately 118 licensed marriage and family therapists and licensed marriage and family therapy associates. The difference is we practice as licensed marriage and family therapists, but marriage and family therapy is also being provided by social workers and psychologists and licensed professional counselors. Our field requires a specific area of study for master's level or doctorate level in marriage and family therapy. I hope that helps address the question of disparity in numbers.
Representative Josephson, do you have anything you would ask?
No. I mean, as Mr. Chairman, as you know, similar in the medical field with ANPs and PAs, it's all gotten very sophisticated and complicated. But I don't have any other questions.
Representative Stafford?
Thank you. Chairman Weber, your answer kind of answered most of what my question was. I have heard anecdotally that people have shifted from their marital and family therapist licensing to other less expensive. What does that mean for the quality of services provided in the state in general?
I wouldn't know how to answer that. I think our concern is to make sure those who are licensed are providing quality services, and for the other professions to monitor, as we do, the services their licensed people practice. I am interested in, I want to thank the current administration's commission, especially the division director, for helping us with our finances. That's Don Habiger, who helped us understand clearly that we are now in the black as a board and his staff. The Sunset Review was very thorough. When I took the chairmanship, I welcomed the opportunity to begin to look at legislation, statutes, and ethical guidelines that are necessary. We wrote to 49 states. We talked and wrote to our national organization. We've cooperated now with other professional healthcare associations to address one of the biggest challenges that we face, and that is teletherapy, telesupervision, long-distance therapy, long-distance supervision. It could mean a licensed therapist in Alaska was for a brief period of time providing therapy to somebody in Idaho, or somebody in Idaho in a residential treatment center providing family therapy to someone in Alaska. We don't have any guidelines established to address those issues. Plus, there's competency issues in teletherapy that an average therapist may not find themselves as confident. There's also issues of confidentiality, encrypted communications. So we have, in the last board meeting, looked at the results of our research over the last 6 months, a month and a half intensively, and we will be prepared at our next legislative meeting to introduce statutes, regulation, proposals, and ethical guidelines. It's a huge challenge that was seen by the Sunset Committee, and we welcome the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Weber, just to, I guess, to ask the question, do you see the fixes that the division has come forward with about investigation costs? Is that going to stabilize your numbers? Or will this prevent drift of people from your therapy licensing to social work and et cetera, et cetera?
I'm not familiar with the exact numbers, but yes, I think it will, and I know that Mr. Hauberger is really working on giving us a new figure. It really is within a couple $100 now, and I don't see anyone leaving the field. I understand people are coming back to it and from the state, and so I don't know how to answer that other than I hope so. And again, it's been a relief to be on board now where we have total clarity about our finances, and that's been very helpful to us.
Good deal. Actually, a different topic. Mr. Weber, if I'll ask the same question I've asked other boards at their extension hearings. Is there anything in the practice of marital and family therapy that might come up as an issue that this committee should know about going forward? What's new in the field?
Well, I think you should be paying attention to how well we address teletherapy and telesupervision. There isn't anything bigger right now on the radar. We have basic competencies, but this puts us at an entirely new level. I'm right now sitting in Hawaii, and my friend is on a television screen in Honolulu at the military base hospital with five family members doing teletherapy, one of them in Iraq, one of them in North Carolina, two of them in Honolulu. He has been doing this for years, and we recognize this is really becoming predominant in our field. I hope you'll ask me the same question soon as we introduce statutes or propose statutes, regulation changes, and ethical guidelines. That's huge. The rest are kind of normal changes any profession faces. But this is a big one for our small board, and I appreciate you understand we have a small board to address and come up with solutions competently.
Thank you. And one last follow-up, I promise. And Mr. Weber, just so when do you plan to come forward with those suggested changes to accommodate teletherapy?
We think we'll be proposing them at the beginning of your next legislative session.
Good deal. We look forward to working with you on that. Thank you.
I look forward to your help with it.
And thanks again for calling in today. And I'd just like to go on the record to say that I appreciate the work that Don Hauberger has done on trying to level the increases on all the boards and commissions. And he has taken on an extremely difficult task, and we hope that it comes to fruition between now and the end of the session, one way or another. But thanks, Don. And we've got one more person online, I believe, Ken McCarty.
Yes, hi, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This is Ken McCarty calling from Eagle River.
Thank you for joining us today.
I'm on the licensing board and also president of the Association for Marriage Family Therapists here in Alaska. Mm-hmm. So I thank you for the time and reviewing the board, and I know that we were only given a four-year extension. 4 years ago when I spoke before the committee, I didn't understand all the different dynamics about the board and how it had been impacted by an investigation years back. Fortunately, that now the board has quite a bit of money in the black that had been collected over the years, and so we don't have that. But that was a major factor up until actually July of 2011, for why the board was not moving forward in regulations and such, because we didn't have any money and we were told that it was going to cost to make regulatory changes and such. So now it's nice to see changes happening. I'd like to address a question regarding the marriage family therapist and other professions, mental health professions that are doing couples counseling and all that. As a licensed marital family therapist, that there's title protection, but there is not license protection. So that means that someone can't call themselves a marital family therapist on their business card or the marquee or such. They can maybe say they're doing couples counseling. And we see that. And like Mr. Weber brought up, is the aspect of professional ability to help as a marriage family therapist, as a mental health professional, but as a specialist in relationship work. So it would be likened to an MD with some specialty training that it separates them. But we don't have practice protection, just title protection.
Is that something you'll be addressing when your legislative committee meets?
We have talked about that over the years, and just like not sure how to make that, you know, clear. It could be further discussion how to do practice protection when someone says that they do couples counseling. We'd have to examine what kind of experience that they have, training such to do couples counseling. So these are discussions being already brought up.
Well, I think that's something that all of us at the table could start thinking about when you come to us in a few months. That we've got at least one attorney at the table that I believe has some experience in that area, and we also have one on retainer to the committee. But you're not alone in that. There are other professions that are facing the same thing. We need to find out how the ones that have solved it got to the point where they did. But in the meantime, we'll see what we can do. But do you have any further comments you'd like to make?
I just want to the comment about the number of licensees, and definitely our high rate, our high license fee has affected people that they'll go to a lesser license to do the mental health work and operate under that license there. And so with the discovery of funds that exist that puts us in the black and reduction of our license fees, I see that we'll get more people wanting to have a marriage family therapist license or a dual license so they can have that title on their business card.
Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. McCarty, first of all, I just want to thank you for calling in. And I know you work really hard to stay current on the issues, and I know you take a considerable amount of time attending meetings and weighing in at different hearings. So I just wanted to, first of all, just thank you for that. And I want to encourage you to work, through the channels, including, of course, Mr. Weber, and also through my staff, Crystal Kinnaman, and myself, in regards to these issues, and please give us an update and this committee an update as the chair allows. And also I wanted to congratulate you in regards to your recent marriage and your beautiful new bride, and wish you marital bliss.
Well, thank you very much. If it wasn't for the legislator, I'd probably be single today. I made a last turn, you know.
Thanks again for calling in today.
Okay, thank you.
Is there anybody else online that, nobody's changed their mind in the room? With that, we'll close out the public testimony. And what are the wishes, Betty?
Mr. Chairman, it's my pleasure to move that this committee pass HB 241, version 28-LS1180/alpha from the Labor and Commerce Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition, the bill moves out of committee, and we are adjourned at 4:15, and no meeting on Friday.